Dear Diary. Location: parking lot of Sportso Baseballs. Time: the day. Occupation: hunting down a vicious, blood-sucking vampire. Person: me, Hunter, the only one who writes in this diary. My friend Carlos Espinosa, my new best friend in Chillhaven, is currently inside with the difficult manager of this restaurant establishment, reviewing the security footage of the fateful night when one Upton St. Queef went missing. I, for reasons I don't care to go into, even in private, am out here in the parking lot on my own, scoping out the scene, looking for clues, tracks, fingerprints, bullet shells, little bits of his fang that he broke off in some guy's neck when there was a struggle. Vampires are like sharks. They go through like 20 fangs a year.
What? Like fingernails?
Yeah.
Is it like when you get crowns and so sometimes like when Sonia Morgan on The Housewives bit into something and her tooth just flew off? Is it like that?
It's exactly. And they have to go to a special vampire dentist.
Yeah. The elders.
Yeah. No, it's like I said. It's like sharks. Okay. They just have a bunch of backup fangs in there. They can just keep breaking them off and get new ones. First place to look. Directly outside.
Theodore! Ah! Carlos comes running out of Sportsville Baseballs with his hands in the air, running straight towards Theodore.
Carlos.
Theodore!
Play it cool. What is it? What did you learn in there?
I saw something on the videotape.
Okay, that's good. That's what you were in there for. What was it?
Okay, so I was watching the tape, okay? And then I saw Upton.
Yeah?
On the tape, and I saw Ron on the tape.
Who's Ron?
Ron Feed is my best, one of my other best friends. You know, with the Boston accent.
Oh, the really pale kid with the Boston accent?
Yeah.
Wow, he was not on my radar at all.
I would like both of you to give me a gazing into the abyss roll. Roll dark. See if the pieces are going to click into place in your little minds.
Probably oh boy. Not.
Both my characters have bad dark.
Roll to be smart.
Roll to be smart.
Can you roll for smart?
Wow.
You are. That was a 6. Because I got plus 2. Can I roll again?
Nope.
Sorry.
That is also a 6.
Great. You both fail. You have filled your roles for smart and chosen, once again, to remain stupid.
No, there's absolutely no way it was that kid. It would have tripped my keen senses immediately. I've been trained to detect monsters all my life, and I'm pretty sure I'm on the right trail, and I have never been on the wrong trail before.
What do you mean, you know, you've been hunting monsters your whole life? What do you mean?
What could that mean?
When I say monsters, I mean just anyone bad. I've had a strong sense of justice ever since I was a child.
Like Batman?
Like Batman. That's weirdly extremely accurate.
Well, and Ron, he's been around my whole life.
Your whole life? Are you sure, Carlos? Think about this very, very hard. Try to trace back to when you met Ron.
I was 5.
We cut. We cut to 5-year-old Carlos meeting Ron.
Hey, my friend Zeke doesn't want to play with me today.
You stink, Carlos.
Oh, he's so mean to me.
Oh, it's okay. We're just little kids. I'm sure he'll get over it soon.
Well,
children can be so irrational.
They are so... What's that mean?
Do you want to play jacks with me?
Jacks?
Yeah, I throw this ball and then you pick these spiky guys up off the ground.
I would love to!
I'm a human boy.
I love having human boyfriends.
Let's be human boyfriends forever.
Hold my hand and seal the deal. Human on three. One, human boyfriends on three. One, two, three.
Human boyfriends.
Humans on three.
We got back.
Yeah. We met at school. He was there for soccer games, D&D night. But he's always been there, and I'm really confused. Why would Ron be in the parking lot? Ron isn't a vampire.
Listen, I've only known Ron for a short while, but I can tell that he is extremely cool.
Monsters can't be cool?
No. No, they cannot.
Okay.
They are vicious killers in the night. They will rend flesh from bone. They will suck your blood dry until you are like a paper doll that they can tear in half so easily.
Carlos's eyes get really wide looking at Theodore.
And they must be stopped.
Okay. So this video then, the only other thing I can think of is, did Upton teleport? Can Upton be invisible?
Well, listen.
Or like change into goo like Alex Mack and slither away?
Well, listen. While I think there is exactly 0% chance that Ron Fetus is the vampire.
Yeah, definitely zero. I'm scratching him off on my notebook. Not a suspect.
There is a vampire. As you so wisely pointed out, a series of animal attacks.
Like in Twilight.
Often isn't what it sounds like. However, vampires often take an accomplice. A poor, innocent, in this case extremely cool soul, to do their dark bidding. When it was Dracula, it was called a Renfield. And when it was other people, it's also called a Renfield, even though I think Renfield was the guy's name. I haven't read that book, though.
You know so much.
Yeah.
Well, then if it's not Ron, who could the monster be?
Carlos, how long have you known Dick Spangler?
And we cut.
Yeah.
I want to crossfade to a low shot, moving with purpose down a sleek industrial hallway. Walking towards us, also with purpose down this hallway, are two well-worn, well-loved cowboy boots. From just above these cowboy boots, we can hear the soft jingle jangle of cowboy spurs.
Why is he walking around with spurs?
He's a cowboy!
Jingle!
To jingle jangle. And who is he that has walked with these spurs? It's, we pull back now to reveal that it is one, Dick Spangler, the astronaut kid.
Jingle jangle time, y'all. He says.
Our camera moves, keeping pace with Dick, except backwards, because it's facing him. You get it. As he walks purposefully down this hallway, past a series of doors with, key card locks on the outside of them, we see him tip his little cowboy hat to a couple of hazmat-suited science goons as they pass.
Oh, hey, Dick.
Howdy. How's it going?
Oh, well, you know, living the dream, right?
Right there, right there.
Somebody's dream.
That's funny there. Y'all have a good one.
Okay, you too.
Ah, those guys. We see Dick walking down the hallways of Indigo Labs in Corporation.
Indigo Corporation Labs?
Indigo Corporation Labs. As he has many times. He's walking down the hallway. He's singing a little tune in his head, waving high to all the goons he passes, before he reaches Meredith's door and politely knocks twice.
We see a tight close-up of a cowboy fist rapping against this featureless door, just to the left of which we see a nameplate on the wall that reads, Meredith Indigo, CEO, Indigo Corporation Labs. After these two delicate, respectful knocks, Dick, you hear from within the office. What?
It's me, Dick. And Dick just tries to open the door and pop his head in.
We cut to the interior of the office, where we see, seated behind her utilitarian desk, one, Meredith Indigo, CEO of Indigo Corporation Labs, coated in a lab coat, white, crisp, clean, a name tag hanging on a lanyard about her neck, a picture on that name tag of the person who I am describing right now, who look like Meredith Indigo.
Look alike Meredith Indigo.
Hair pulled back tight into a no-nonsense ponytail, below which hair are some big, round, stern glasses, which rest atop a narrow, flat, also stern face. Surrounding this face is the office. In front of the desk, two chairs, uncomfortable, possibly deliberately so. On the walls, pictures of Meredith Indigo shaking hands with the bad presidents and bad corporate people that you would probably recognize. But she seems quite proud in these photos of meeting these terrible people. And then the door cracks open and we are greeted with a cheerful cowboy face beneath an equally cheerful cowboy hat.
You were expecting me, right, Meredith?
Oh, yes, Mr. Spangler. Lovely to see you. Come on in.
Hi, always nice to see you, Meredith. How are you?
Oh, yeah, wonderful. Dick, how are you?
Oh, you know, just, you know, no one's asked me that in a while. I've kind of had a lot going on.
We see Meredith check her watch.
School's been a lot trickier than I thought it would be. The schedule is quite tight, but,
you know,
I'm making myself quite cozy at home these days.
Wonderful. Okay, small talk commenced. What are you here to see me for, Dick?
Well, I just wanted to check in to see if you had any updates with, you know, what we've been talking about with our loose, I guess we could say, plans moving forward. You know, a voice has spoken to me recently that has just made me reflect on our plans, and I just wanted to meet up to chat, make sure we're still on the same page, we have the same intentions. I know we've been, I'd like to say maybe friends, friend-like for a while, co-workers, cohorts, if you will.
Yes, Dick, I agree. We are certainly co-workers. Sorry, you've been hearing voices?
Well, not quite. That's not quite what I said. I can see how you would interpret it that way. But no, I said a voice has just been speaking to me. It's really just me in my own head, like just regular thoughts, really.
Sort of an internal monologue.
Exactly. You do it too, I see.
Mm-hmm. Yep. But I also often have thoughts that present themselves as language.
Yes, exactly. But I care a lot about my friends. I care a lot about the future. I care a lot about the planet, and I'm glad that we're working together. And sometimes I think people just get the wrong idea about who the good guys are around here. So I just wanted to stop by and check on things.
Well, Dick, I'm glad that you stopped in. I also, as you know, care very deeply about the future.
Right.
And this planet for whatever amount of time I spend on it. You know, people, Dick, have a seat. And we see Meredith gesture to one of these seemingly medievally designed to be uncomfortable office chairs.
Oh, thank you, ma'am.
So, first of all, how has the training, the test been going? I know you went through all this in your astronaut days, you know, the gyroscopes and the blood tests and all of that stuff. How are you feeling? I've been watching your results with great interest. It seems like despite the, how should I put this, fundamental cosmic molecular rearranging of your body, place in the time stream, and human consciousness, in a physical sense, at least, you seem like you're in ship shape.
Yeah, I mean, I can't say physically I would know any different at this point. Tests have been okay. I feel physically all right. Emotionally, that's another story, but we can save that for another day.
Yes, emotions I find are usually best saved for another day.
I've heard that somewhere.
So about the Time Walker project, tell me your concerns, Dick.
So my concerns really stem from, you know, Meredith, you were asking about tests. Tests have never really been my issue. I pass tests. I do things well. You give me the assignment and I learn it. Tests have never been my issue, but there's always a time where some outside force comes in, some outside evil, and just ruins the plan, takes away my friends, takes away my loved ones, wants to take over the world. You know how it goes.
Yes, Dick, I'm afraid I do.
So it's not you and me that I'm nervous about, Meredith. I know that we're going to do everything that we can, but every now and then I just get a feeling like someone's going to ruin it. So I just don't know who we can trust.
Well, Dick, you make an excellent point. There are myriad forces at work to beguile us, be they government regulators, family members, quote-unquote citizens of the town, quote-unquote city officials. You know, the path to greatness, Dick, is paved with the corpses of those who stand in our way.
More in the sense of, like, not human bodies, but like, we're gonna destroy the evil to save everybody.
Well, Dick, let's talk about evil, shall we? You've seen the same future I have. You've borne witness to the ultimate evil. You've seen it, Dick. You feel it. I know you do, in your bones, the same way I do. It has to be stopped. And this project, using the Time Walker, using this, let's call it a chronomatic mech suit designed to walk through the future and lay waste to our enemies, you know that that's the only way that we can save mankind.
Exactly, save mankind.
And ensure that consumers will continue to exist for centuries more.
So that everyone can live happy.
That too, yeah.
And peacefully.
Yes.
In a world and have everything that they need and not be ruined by evil.
I feel like we're on the same page. And you just keep doing what you're doing on your end. Do all of those tests. Do all that training that we've been putting you through. You know, like I said, if you want to wear that lead suit during the radiation tests, I think that could be a good idea. I don't know how your body, frankly, what it's composed of at this stage, or how it would react to radiation, cosmic, temporal, or otherwise. But, you know, if you just want to free ball it, you do you. And then on my end, I'll work on the technical aspects of getting that suit in ship shape so that you can do your job and pilot it against whatever odds may lay before you and hopefully survive and then save the future.
Right. Like, half of what you're saying is really what I wanted to hear. And then the other half, it's not that I didn't want to hear it. I'm just not sure I know what to say about it yet. But
Meredith reaches across her desk without, like, moving just her hand and arm, but without, like, moving her body towards you at all, and pats Dick on the top of the hand in a fairly clinical way.
Dick slowly, without being too obvious, is kind of leaning into it a little, like, yeah.
And she says, Dick, saying things that you want to hear is exactly what I'm here to do.
You've given me a lot to think about, Meredith. You know, I wasn't going to bring this up, but...
Meredith looks at her watch again.
You know, I was just at home, sprucing up the place, as a new homeowner does. And you know who came to visit me?
I couldn't begin to imagine.
You don't even want to guess. Sometimes my friends at school, when I say, guess what happened, sometimes they guess. Zeke likes to guess. You've met Zeke.
Yes, I'm aware of Zeke.
But no, it was Vesper.
Vesper Indigo?
Maybe. Yep. Yeah. That strange to you?
No, I just hadn't noticed that trip on their GPS. You know, it doesn't matter.
It really wasn't much of a trip. It was kind of just like a, hi, how's it going? Bye. Friend time, kind of. But they seemed distressed. I just wanted to see how things were with the family. And I'm just trying to make my connections around here, Meredith, as you know.
Dick, I just want to say thank you so much.
You didn't answer any of my questions.
for checking in with me about my family and reciprocating all of the warmth that I've, an interest.
Yeah, I don't have a family.
That I've shown to you. It means a lot. And it makes me feel more than ever that we really are coworkers. If there's nothing else.
You know, if I do have some things to maybe reflect on, but I'll try to send it in an email. But I do look forward to our next meeting. I will keep you updated on the suit until then.
I look forward to your full update.
Yes, right. Take care, Meredith. And we see Dick tip his hat.
Meredith reaches for, but she's not wearing a hat. She just kind of reaches up and then awkwardly just gives you a thumbs up.
Happens every time. And we see Dick slowly pull the door shut behind him.
Cut up through the ceiling of the Indigo Corporation Labs until we're hovering in a cool drone shot over the entire Anodyne Pines. That drone, which our camera is presumably attached to, swoops and swirls over the beautiful wooden landscape before hovering over a highway. Going down this highway, a jet black, beat-up roadster from the 1950s or thereabouts. Not the kind of car you see every day driving down the streets of Chillhaven. Inside this automobile are three individuals. One, Zeke Lynn, sitting in the passenger seat, vibrating a little bit with anticipation. Two, Ron Fetus, in the driver's seat, steering that wheel, and in the back seat, Penny White.
Snacking.
Their destination revealed to us on a road sign as they swoop past. Next exit, Ordinary Falls. Okay, Ron, yeah, so you're going to take the ramp right there, and then you're going to see a really creepy looking town with no people in it and a bunch of empty buildings, and that's where we're going.
Does anybody want a graham cracker?
It's really weird. No, I'm good, Penny. Thank you, though.
No, thank you, Penny.
All right.
It's really weird. Like, do you not remember any of the directions from when you drove us here last time?
No, Zeke, I don't have good brain for directions, maps. You know, spatial, kind of 3D spatial awareness is not my strong suit.
I understand that. One time I got lost in my own basement as a kid.
That sounds terrifying.
I got lost down there. I couldn't find the stairs.
Where did they move?
No.
Were they coming out of the ceiling? Or the, like,
no,
the...
No, not yet. It was just regular stairs.
Oh.
But I checked I thought I had checked every wall, and I was, like, pretty sure the stairs come out of a wall.
Are we there yet?
No, not yet, Penny. I promise I'll stop the car when we get there. I like this song a lot, Zeke. What did you say this was? It was by some kind of Lord?
Well, yeah, her name is Lord. She's not a Lord. It's just her name.
We don't care. Driving Cadillacs in our dreams.
You sing good.
Thanks, it's catchy.
Hey, you got a real soothing baritone.
Hey, so why are we going to this creepy place, you guys?
Zeke looks at Penny, confused, because Ron should know this. Well, because, you know, the last time we were in Ordinary Falls, we learned a bunch of revelatory information about mine and Penny's moms.
Yeah.
But then we all got attacked by a bunch of scary clown skeletons and had to flee the scene.
Yeah, like, obviously I remember all of that stuff.
Yeah, so, like,
but
you
why
know,
are we going back right now?
Well, Penny and I just... We need answers.
Mom Venture.
And this is the last place we found answers, and we didn't have time to explore properly to get answers, so...
That yeah, makes sense. Like squirrel returning to same place to dig up nut.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You find answers once. Best money bet answers be there again.
Plus, we gotta see Dookie.
Right.
I love to see Dookie.
You both sure loved him the first time.
Ooh, there's his bar.
Oh! Oh, hey, Zeke, man, watch out. That's my knob.
Ow. right in between the eyes. Oh, man. Ears are ringing. Okay, I'm good.
And we cut to the exterior of the vehicle as the doors pop open on either side. We find ourselves in what can only be described as a ghost town. We see businesses empty, some boarded up, some just all smashed down. Broken glass lines the streets, and a tumbleweed even blows past. In the distance, we can see on a hill overlooking Lake Obelisk, a creepy old mansion. A creepy old mansion that should, the description of which should sound familiar as one Nevermare Manor. But we don't have to worry about that just yet because we are in front of a bar known as the Dookie Hole.
The Dookie Hole!
A bar that was just as abandoned, quiet, and desolate as the rest of these buildings the last time we saw it, except that is now a positive hive of activity. Even from out here on the street, you all can hear the jaunty jukebox music playing, the clanking of glasses, and the cheerful chatter of a number of skeletons' happy teeth.
Oh, God.
We see through the window, through the door, that every single table and seat is occupied with partying skeleton customers.
Shit. This place has changed, kind of.
Yeah. Yeah. Are these good skeletons?
I'm not sure.
What are we thinking on that?
They seem
to be having
skeleton.
A nice time.
Only one way to find out.
Just go on in there, huh?
I figured you were going to go in there either way, so.
Hope that, well, I mean.
Better together than you just, you know, run off ahead.
Yep. Zeke runs off ahead.
Oh.
That's so rude.
Penny, as you watch the trail of, as you see the dust, the Zeke-shaped cloud of dust that occupies the space where Zeke once was, you hear from the person standing next to you, okay, guess that's our cue to head on in, huh? And you turn, Penny, and you look at this person. Upturned nose, pointy ears, alabaster skin, red eyes. And Penny, you realize that you don't have the slightest idea who this person is. Please roll to gaze into the abyss.
Gaze it.
Twelve.
Whoa.
Damn.
All right.
Big money, no whammies.
Penny, you gaze on this individual who just spoke to you with the familiarity of a friend, and you have absolutely no idea who he is or why he's here with you. But you know one thing for sure. He looks like a fucking vampire.
We see Penny immediately take a step back and look at Ron like she's just seen a ghost, essentially. Or if someone who hadn't seen ghosts regularly had seen a ghost. Not as if she's seen a ghost.
Like she's seen some kind of new, scarier ghost.
Yeah. She doesn't say anything because I think it catches her so off guard that she just kind of like gasps for air as she steps back.
Well, Penny, you okay? You swallow a bug or something?
What? Zeke!
You gotta
Zeke!
Go in here! There's a skeleton!
Everybody
party!
Back up!
What? Come in! These
no,
skeletons
Zeke,
are
look!
Cool!
Zeke, you poke your head out the front door of the bar. We see over your shoulder six skeletons doing a conga line. As another skeleton in a big top hat bangs merrily on a piano. Zeke, you look at Penny and see instantly the distress on her face. And then you look at the stranger standing next to her. Pointy ears, upturned nose, red eyes, alabaster skin, oddly fangular teeth. And you realize that you have no idea who this person is, but he looks like a fucking vampire. Zeke, Please roll to gaze into the abyss.
Please be smart. You gaslight me right
dark,
now.
Yeah.
Yep.
Great. Both of my characters have bad dark, which is weird because they're both people who supposedly have an expertise in identifying monsters.
Carlos is plus two, which is interesting.
Carlos is plus two?
Yeah, Carlos is going to be a secret little
multifaceted.
Weapon.
Mm-hmm. Ah, damn it. James.
Three.
Oh my God. Well, mark my life for experience.
Zeke, you blink your eyes and you don't know what you were thinking. That's your friend, Ron.
What's the matter?
Zeke, get in the car! We gotta go!
Oh, Penny, what's the matter?
Ron, what's going on?
I don't know, Zeke. She just started freaking out. I think she swallowed a bug.
Penny points at Ron, we'll call him, and looks at Zeke and goes, see? We gotta go. We gotta figure out a plan. We gotta
go. Penny, what's going on?
Penny takes off running and gets behind Zeke's shoulder.
Penny, what's happened? What are you doing?
That looks like a fucking vampire.
Ron?
Who is that?
Penny, are you okay?
What are you talking about, Zeke? We've got to go.
Penny, that's Ron.
Zeke, come on.
Penny, he's the... Penny, that's... I don't know what you're saying. What are you saying? That's Ron. He's like one of our best friends. He drove us here.
Penny looks at Ron. Who are you?
Who am I?
What are you? Are you a vampire?
Whoa, there's a lot of words getting thrown around right now.
Penny, what is this all about?
What do you mean?
He drove us here. We were in the car with Ron. We were talking about how we were friends with Ron, and we were going to have a nice time with Ron in Ordinary Falls, and then I go into the bar, and I come back out, and you say you don't know who Ron is. What's going on?
I don't know who that is.
Listen, maybe this trip was a bad idea. It seems like something about this spooky town, maybe it's the skeletons getting inside your mind. You guys said the last time you came there was like... ghost.
The last time we came, you were with us.
We all remembered how the last time we all came, thank you, Zeke.
Penny's eyes are darting all around. Like, she is not okay.
There's dark, malign forces at work here. We all saw that hooded figure inside. Neverwhere Mansion?
Yes.
Could be turning your mind against friends, Penny. It's me, your good friend Ron Fetus.
Oh, it could be Mr. Never Whatever.
Yeah, I bet it's probably Mr. Never Whatever.
Breaking your brain. He could have put a spell over the whole town.
Put a spell on your brain.
Maybe there's no skeleton party. Zeke peeks back in the door. No, there's a skeleton party. That part's real.
We see the one of the skeletons is crowd surfing. There's another skeleton laying down on the bar and Dookie's pouring shots in his mouth.
Save some for me.
Okay. You guys can come inside if you want.
Yeah, no, Dookie, we'll be right in. I have so much I want to say to you. Just give me 1 second.
All right.
We got something to work out outside.
Penny's going to lock eyes with Ron and slowly walk up to him until they're about, like, 6 inches apart from each other, eyes locked. And she's going to look him dead in the eyes and say, who are you? Now.
Penny, I'm going to have you roll to keep your cool.
Keep your friend cool.
When you keep your cool and act despite fear, name what you're afraid of and roll with cold.
In this exact moment, I'm afraid that he's a fucking vampire. He wants to kill me.
Okay, great.
Or anybody. 6. That's not good either, though.
Nope, that is a failure.
Bad. Oh my God.
God
Mark
damn.
Experience.
Penny, you stand face to face with Ron, eyes locked with his red, beady eyes, and you feel in your heart that cold grip of fear that you have felt so many times in the past when you, your friends, even Bart are in mortal danger. And that fear, Penny, causes your mind to flinch. Just for a moment, but that moment is enough. We see in Ron's red eyes, now not static red irises, but swirling red clouds, like the sky above a forest fire. We see his eyes swirling magnetically as he looks into yours. And we can even see, and you too would see, Penny, if you weren't locked in the eyeball zone, his red amulet glint momentarily with a flash of light. You can't even feel his vampiric psychic waves worming their way around your mind, Penny. But they are there, as he says to you,
"Yo, Penny, it's me, your good friend, Ron Fetus. We've been through so much together, you and me, Zeke, Angela, even Carlos. I was there, me and Zeke helped you when you accidentally killed Violet Crankshaw. I was there during all that Zeke, what you call them?
Blankenthropes.
I was there through all of that blankenthrope business. And when Prospect Quandary landed in Chillhaven, I've always been there. We're good friends, Penny, and I'm totally not a vampire at all."
We see Penny look down for a moment and then look back up at Zeke and then look back up at Ron and then just kind of start tearing up a little bit. "I'm sorry, Ron."
"Hey, it's okay, Penny. It happens to the best of us."
"I don't know what just happened to me."
"Just take a seat, maybe take a deep breath. Do you want me to get you some water or something?"
Just a second. "Dookie! Can I get a glass of water?"
Zeke retrieves a glass of water from inside the dookie hole and brings it out to Penny.
Penny is just like not breaking eye contact with Zeke. Like, I think she's still just waiting for someone to come out and be like, "Here's an explanation for a lot of stuff." But instead, I just got some water. But I'm still just looking at Zeke.
Zeke's looking back at you like, if you're looking to him for an explanation, his face is giving you like, "Oh."
"Listen, guys, I think maybe we were a bit too cavalier about returning to this spooky town."
"Yeah, there's evil wizards here."
"It was terrifying the way it just took grip of my good friend Pennywhite's mind and turned her against me."
"Buck wild."
"Yeah. I mean, last time we were here, like, y'all remember that stuff with the house? Like, every time I would astral project, like, it was, like, sucking part of my soul away at the same time, I guess."
"Yeah, I was here and I remember that."
"Yeah. Let's just go inside." Penny takes her water and goes into the bar.
"Hey, can you guys really play or rip like a xylophone?" "Always wanted to see that shit."
We cut to a scene of Angela Atticus Jr. at night in front of an entrance to the Chillhaven Caverns. She's wearing black cargo pants, a gray tank top tucked into her pants, black belt, black boots, black backpack, and a headlamp. She's also wearing her signature meatball hairstyle, but this time her meatballs are braided.
Tactical meatballs.
Tactical meatballs. She looks around. It's dark. Tons of pine trees cascade above her. She smells pine needles and a little bit of smoke in the distance. And she hears some fireflies don't make sounds.
"Hey, look at my butt. Hey, look at my butt. Hey, look at my butt. Hey, look at my butt."
As Angela uses all five of her beautiful senses to take in the creepy nighttime wooded surroundings of the Anodyne Pines, our camera pulls back and we see her surrounded, almost enveloped, by the wide, gaping chasm of the entrance to the caves and tunnels that crisscross beneath the Anodyne Pines and the town of Chillhaven. Angela now hears a new sound ringing through her ears from deep within the cavern. We hear the heavy, thunderous fall of cloven hooves on rock. The sound gets louder and closer, echoing through the caverns that lie just out of sight. Gradually, these sounds stop getting louder and transform and soften into the sound of a tennis-shoed feet.
Angela turns over to where she hears the sounds and her headlamp illuminates Emma Riley Woods.
For just a moment, in the light of the headlight, Angela, you see the form of a hulking black bipedal goat. But just as quickly as it arrives, that vision is gone, and you see before you a small, blonde, human girl. Wearing jodhpurs, those pants that are poofy at the top and skinny at the bottom, like a director or an equestrian would wear. Covering over the bottom of these pants are tall, sleek, black boots. Emma's also wearing a dark wool blazer, and on top of her blonde head, a khaki-colored pith helmet. She arrives directly beside Angela, her face illuminated by the headlight, and says, Hi, can you get that fucking thing out of my eyes?
Yeah, but, I mean, okay, Angela just turns off the light.
Thank you. Some of us have dark vision.
Well, I don't. How am I going to see?
Well, aren't you a fae? Do you think that all the dryads and goblins and pikas and spirits of the forest all run around with little REI headlamps attached to their heads?
No.
Interesting.
So you're saying I need to practice on my night vision?
Have you ever tried?
No.
Might be a good time for it. If we're leaving the human world behind, maybe you should give a little thought to fitting in.
Okay. Angela takes her headlamp off and puts it in her backpack. So, are you all set to go?
Yep, I'm as ready as I'll ever be.
Well,
by which I mean I transformed from my demon form into a human form that looks like this.
Perfect. So, have you been to the Feywild before?
Do you want to stand in front of my cave and chat, or?
I mean, well, I was just trying to tell you, to get there, we just have to get lost. So I don't want you to think that I'm just like wandering around aimlessly and I don't know where I'm going. I mean, I don't know where I'm going, but it's like on purpose.
Whatever you say, Angela, this is your expedition. I'm just your faithful number two. And she salutes her pith helmet.
Oh, yeah. I want to talk about that.
It's a pith helmet.
Well, I don't want to talk about the hat.
I saw a guy wearing one in the jungle one time before he succumbed to diphtheria. I always thought it looked super cool.
You took that from him?
No. I'm not really wearing any of this stuff.
Is it just magic?
Exactly. I'm still a big demon. I just look like this now. To you and to, you know, whoever's around.
Is it just like a glamour?
Kind of. But it has materiality. You can, here, touch it. And she leans her head forward a little bit.
Angela sticks her hand out hesitantly, but touches her head.
Yeah, you feel hat.
That feels real. Isn't that exhausting to like spend all that magic doing that?
Not even remotely.
They're kind of powerful.
Yeah, I'm kind of powerful.
Well, so yeah, that's why I wanted you to come, but also...
Oh, wow. Thanks.
So, remember I was talking to you about that show when I saw you last night, A Song of Wings and Whispers?
Yes. Okay. I apologize. I haven't had time to catch up on it since.
Well, I don't know much about how this fake word stuff is supposed to work. But in the show, every ruler has an emissary. It's kind of like a representative of their court. So your role is my emissary. Emma, the emissary.
Oh, it's a pun.
Yeah. It just happened to be that way. But so if anyone asks... That's what you are. Because there's going to be a lot of pushback because I don't think a lot of them would probably normally see someone like you in the court.
Why do you think that is?
Because you're probably usually not allowed in there.
Oh, is that what you think?
And you probably eat fairies. Do you eat fairies?
I feel like you've jumped to a lot of conclusions based on a fictional television show.
That's all I have to go off of. But you're my emissary of my court? I don't really have a court, but we're going to pretend. So that's your title, okay?
Emissary of the pretend court.
Of the pretend court. We'll come up with a name later.
Okay, great.
Okay, well...
And what are my job duties and responsibilities as the emissary of pretend court?
Well, we make decisions together. I confide in you.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be a super spy around the court. Kind of keep an ear to everything and then report back to me.
And what will you be doing while I'm doing all this work?
Schmoozing, of course.
Ah.
I mean, that's what they do in the TV show. You know, going to dances. We're all going to be going to dances, right? And have big dinners. At least that's just how it is on TV. And that's how I'm assuming it's going to be like for this journey too. So, but we can start walking. Do you actually kind of want to lead the way? Because I can't really see anything.
Follow me. And we see Emma walk at a pace that seems too fast for how her size appears to us. Before long, Angela, she's almost out of sight.
Emma, wait! I can't even see you!
Try harder.
Angela stops and squints her eyes. She looks around her, scanning the forest, looking up and down. She closes her left eye, closes her right eye, tries to look out of one eye at a time. It's not getting any better. I still am looking at everything with human eyes. Angela takes a step forward and trips on a rock. Ow! Emma, can I just use my headlamp again? We're not even in the Feywild yet.
You hear directly in your ear. And with a jolt, you realize that Emma is standing directly beside you.
How'd you get there?
She reaches out a hand to help you up.
Angela hesitates for a second, but then gives her hand to Emma.
Emma, with seemingly no effort, pulls you easily back to your feet. Follow me. Stay close.
Angela dusts off her knees and looks up at Emma. Okay, I'll try to keep up.
Akasa Luwin.
No one calls me that. You can just call me Angela.
I'm calling you your true name for a reason, Akasa Luwin. First of all, names have power. When you know something or someone's true name, it gives you control over them.
Like Rumpelstiltskin.
Exactly like Rumpelstiltskin. Great guy, by the way. If we see him at one of these parties, then I'm going to have to chat with him.
Rumpelstiltskin?
Oh, yeah. He's awesome. I'm using your true name now, Akasa Luwin, to remind you of your power. Tell me, Akasa Luwin, what are you?
I'm told that I'm like fae, like a forest creature.
What does that mean to you?
Well, I mean, that's kind of a complicated answer. What it is to me right now and what it means to me is that I am part of nature and I draw power from nature. Nature seems to be on my side. But I don't know too much about what my powers could be or what I could use them for. And it seems like I'm supposed to be using my powers to protect nature. So we're kind of one in the same. But I mean, this is kind of why I'm going on this journey too, is to figure out this stuff more. Kind of been left to my own devices, obviously.
Emma, as you're talking, slows to a stop. And you see her reach out towards a large pine tree that's right beside you guys. And you see her reach to the closest, lowest, smallest branch. And with a quick movement, snap it off. And she hands it to you. And she says, what is this? Is this nature?
Yeah.
Or is it a stick?
It's nature.
If I take it to the city and put it on a table at Sportso Baseballs, is it nature or is it a stick?
I mean, to me, it's still nature.
What is the table at Sportso Baseballs that was hewn from logs that were cut from a tree? Is that nature?
I'm technically...
Then everything is nature, including the disgusting humans who occupy that idiotic sports pub. They're nature too, yes? And if everything is nature, then it sort of renders the term meaningless, doesn't it?
Yes.
Moments ago, this was a tree. Now it's a fucking stick. Give me your hand.
Angela sticks out her hand.
Emma takes your hand in one hand, and so quickly you can't even react. You see her fingers on her other hand extend into razor-sharp claws, and she severs your arm from your body at the elbow.
Ow! Angela pulls away. Why would you do that?
She holds up your arm in front of you, Angela, which before your eyes rapidly turns into a pile of sticks and vines.
Ow! Angela grabs where her arm once was. Angela looks down and is panting really hard. Oh my God. And then she bites her tongue and looks up at Emma. So what are you trying to teach me right now? And why did you think that it was okay to cut my arm off?
Playing it pretty cool for someone whose arm just got cut off at the elbow.
Yeah, it barely hurt. Angela goes into her backpack and takes out a hoodie and tries to start wrapping it around her arm. Can you kind of help me? Since you just chopped off my arm and I'm bleeding a lot, I don't really want any animals picking up my scent.
That's your chief concern right now?
Yes. Why'd you cut my arm off? Make it go back.
I'm proving a point.
Angela sticks her arm out. Well, sticks her chopped off arm out.
You are not a human being, Akasa Lawine. You were molded and shaped in the same way that I shaped this adorable hat. You can touch it. You can see it. It's on my head. But it's not who I am. You, at a very young age, were put into this human shape for reasons and by forces far beyond your understanding. If you are going to survive...
You're talking so slow and I'm bleeding so much.
We see Emma reach out her hand, which is still has claws on it, and she touches this fairly clean but bloodied stump at the end of your elbow, and the bleeding stops.
Okay, go on.
You are not full of blood. You are not a human being. And if you are going to survive the ordeal that you are about to enter into, it is important that you realize that. Now grow your arm back, quit your whining, and let's get moving.
Angela rolls her eyes at Emma and closes her eyes and holds the stump where her arm once was. She thinks deep into her mind what her arm used to look like. And then she envisions vines and twigs wrapping around it. As she opens her eyes, her arm is slowly growing back, but not fast enough and not all the way. Well, I'm kind of getting there.
Great. Now fix your eyes too, and we can actually get this trip started.
Okay, trying to fix my eyes again. Angela takes a deep breath and closes her eyes. She envisions herself walking through the dark anodyne pines and seeing this time through supernatural eyes. She sees everything clearly. She opens her eyes and tries to look at Emma.
We cut to a close-up shot of Angela's eyes in the darkness. And we see her blink them open before a second set of more verdant eyelids closes in front of them, except sideways this time. And when those eyelids peel back, we see Angela's eyes replaced with bright yellow eyes. Angela, you see Emma through this forest with perfect clarity. You can still tell that it's night. You can still tell that it's dark. The colors are muted, more gray than their normal daytime hues. But you can see everything around you clearly. And you can see around Emma a fiery red aura.
Angela pulls up her semi-severed arm and says, "Hey, it actually worked. I can see you." So that was a lot easier than I thought it was. I didn't know I could do that.
Again, if you want to, you know, sit on the throne of the entire fairy realm.
I mean, you want that.
Excuse me?
That's literally the deal we made.
What I want is irrelevant.
Is it? Is it?
Angela, I'm here for you.
Kind of.
I want to see you live up to your potential. And in order to do that, you're going to have to push yourself with my help.
Yeah, I know you're doing this all for your own interest.
Look around the forest, Angela. What else do you see?
I mean, I see leaves, some logs, some mushroom.
Use your new eyes. Look further. Look at that mushroom, actually.
I mean, I can see, like, all the roots underneath of it. I can see, like, the fungal systems in the ground.
As soon as you say that, the mushroom opens its mouth and growls with its little sharp teeth and then pulls its legs up out of the ground and runs away.
Why did that happen?
You can see now what is normally hidden from those pathetic mortals that occupy your little town. Anodyne Pines is a special place, Angela. It's like very few other places on Earth. The Fey world, and to a lesser extent my world, both overlap with the mortal world here. The fabric between their reality and yours and mine is much thinner here. And there are many things and forces that can permeate that membrane back and forth at will.
Your world?
Yeah.
Where's your world? Angela looks down.
Yeah, you get the idea. If you follow those caves long enough and deep enough, well.
So that's why you live there. Easy access?
And, you know, with real estate prices being what they are these days.
Right? In this economy? Did we just, like, kind of, like, laugh and have a moment?
Oh, I'm having a great time.
I can't really tell.
So something else you should know about the Feywild is the rules there are different than they are here.
How do you know?
Are you serious?
I'm just trying to act tough. I mean, that is a reason that I brought you with me.
The human world is controlled by the physical forces. Physics, gravity, electromagnetism.
Science stuff.
Science stuff, exactly. Yawn, boring.
Yeah.
Science cannot describe the laws of the fairy world. But other human inventions can be more useful. One of them, symbols. Symbols operate very differently in the fairy world than they do in yours, Angela.
Symbol like salt circle symbol, like round circle.
Exactly.
It took flow away, which we'll get to later.
They carry more weight here or there. They can be used in maybe a more literal sense. Do you understand my meaning?
Symbols carry a lot of weight in the Fey world.
Symbols like portals, for instance. And Emma gestures ahead. And you see now with your super dark vision that ahead of you, there's a slight clearing in the forest, past which the trees come together more densely than they have anywhere you've walked so far. And directly in between that clearing and that dense thicket of forest, you see that two trees have grown up and curved towards each other, forming an almost perfect wooden circle. And Emma says, sure, human beings can come out here and get lost and find themselves in the fairy world, but those of us with eyes to see know where to look. And those of us who know the signs and signifiers know where to go. And you can see now that there's a faint purple glowing aura around the periphery of this circle of trees.
God, this is the entrance, right?
It's an entrance.
This was way easier than the last time I did this.
Aren't you glad you brought me along?
We'll see.
Your hands grew back.
Oh, Angela looks down. It did. She wiggles her fingers. Feels pretty good.
Emma reaches out her hand, which has returned from its claw form back to its human form, and she grasps Angela's new hand.
Angela smiles a little bit and then notices what she's doing and stops smiling. Let's go in. Let's after you.
No, we can go in together.
Okay.
And our camera remains stationary in the forest as we watch Angela Atticus Jr. and Emma Riley Woods walk forward through the circle of trees, at which point they vanish from our sight.
Penny White and Dick Spangler are played by Ness Lawson. Angela Atticus Jr. and Carlos Espinosa are played by Megan Stressman. Zeke Lynn and Hunter Von Price are played by James Kedlar. James is also the composer for all of Chillhaven's original music. Ron Phoebus, as well as every other colorful character in Chillhaven, are played by our game master and producer, Philip Jane Stressman. Additional sound effects provided by Zapsplat.com. Monster Hearts tabletop game created by Avery Alder. Good night, everyone.